this session to order with the drums of freedom.
Metaphysical. And the only thing that most of us know about metaphysics is the question, if a tree falls in the woods and there's no one there to hear it, does it make a sound? And the funny thing about metaphysics is that the most quoted person is an 18th century German philosopher named Dr. Kant. And what's so funny about that is that there's people in our community who practice metaphysics without knowing it, and still their favorite word is Kant. And they have a similar question. Namely, if a man has a child and he doesn't do anything to help support it, does it really exist? And he can't see that you can't be a man if you don't face your responsibilities. Ain't no justification for not taking care of your children, no matter how you feel about the mother talking about that bitch. But if this shit ain't bitch but holes and tricks, and all you do is hoe and trick, then what does that make you? See, I ain't got no deadbeat friends, because I know a man who got his own child's back and never have my back in the end. Besides, what makes him think that he could stand in the same room with men? Why face your fears? Stay home, play PlayStation, drink beers. I hope you choke on 40 ounces of your children's tears. You think this is happy that your baby's mom's got a new man to get help pay for your kids? Name one thing more important to do with your money than take care of your child. But instead, you'd rather play predator and take some prospect out, knowing your baby's mom should just come up behind with a baseball bat, and as soon as you lean back, just crack the oven steak out your mouth. You're a child in a man's body. First loser want to buy a round of drinks at the party. Feeling generous, are we? What you should be feeling is sorry. And it doesn't even occur that now you're forcing your mother to watch you do the same thing to another woman that your father did to her. But I know you can't afford child support. Where a real man would rather work four jobs and see his children starve, you just lay around talking about what you can't handle. But then again, for you, I guess it's good that your children don't metaphysically exist, because that way you can justify not being a man, can't you?
Nudism, violent content. Parental discretion is advised.
I chose my friends carefully. The more politically active black students, the foreign students, the Chicanos, the Marxist professors and structural feminists and punk rock performance poets. We smoked cigarettes, attended classes sparingly, drank beer heavily, and tried drugs enthusiastically. At night in the dorms we discussed neocolonialism, France Fanon, Eurocentrism, and patriarchy. And if the high didn't solve whatever it was that was getting you down, it could at least help you laugh at the world's ongoing folly and see through all the hypocrisy and bullshit.
We'll be right back. another unmanned drone ended up where it wasn't supposed to end up, in somebody's backyard along the U.S.-Mexico border. It was not a U.S. drone. The National Transportation Safety Board says a Mexican drone crashed in a yard in El Paso. It's trying to find out why it was operating in U.S. airspace in the first place.
Two words for you.
Predator drones.
You will never see it coming.
You think I'm joking?
Comes to Afghanistan and Iraq, the stories Americans hear often sound.
He's taking part in a turning point for American troops and the United States.
Optimistic, the story lines.
The Marines are taking extraordinary risks to avoid civilian casualties.
Often follow the official line of the United States Department of Defense very closely. For example, the mainstream media reported that this scene
represents the last American combat troops in Iraq.
Never mind that 50,000 American troops remain in Iraq, with reports on the ground confirming some of at least 4,500 special ops forces continue to be directly engaged in military operations. It's not coincidental to build this narrative.
We're making progress.
Progress. Progress.
The Pentagon spends a lot of money and effort in what critics like Jake DeLiberto, who served as a Marine in Afghanistan and Iraq, call propaganda.
There are stories that look like any other news item. The public is not told it was produced by the military.
DeLiberto has helped launch a campaign to counteract it.
No amount of spin can hide the fact that the Afghanistan war isn't making us safer.
The Pentagon has really pulled a curtain over much of the mainstream media. And it's because the mainstream media wants the story. They want to tell the story of the American hero.
People may think the U.S. military's counterinsurgency strategy is about winning the hearts and minds of people on the ground in Iraq and Afghanistan. But it's also about winning them at home, which help explains why the Pentagon budgets more than $500 million on PR efforts to sell and market the war to Americans, to influence public opinion right here in the United States.
Officials have argued that isn't exactly the case.
If I tried to change your opinion about a policy or a practice of the Department of Defense, that's influence. The role of public affairs is to provide you the information so that you can make an informed decision yourself.
Gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerers of death's construction. In the fields, the body's burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning our brainwashed minds. Oh Lord, yeah.
You've got to get the job done there. And that requires us to have enough troops that we're not just air raiding villages and killing civilians, that we're not just air raiding villages and killing civilians,
that we're not just air raiding villages and killing civilians,
which is causing enormous problems there.
Politicians hide themselves away. They only started the war. Why should they leave that role to the pawn? Time will tell on the power minds making war just for fun, treating people just like pawns in chess. Wait till the judgment day comes.
I am very optimistic about Iraq. I think it's going to be one of the great achievements of this administration.
What? What? Did I hear that right? Play that again.
I think it's going to be one of the great achievements of this administration.
Iraq, one of the greatest achievements of this administration. The same folks who blasted the surge, listen to this.
We don't need any more spin about how the surge is succeeding.
This is a cycle of self-sustaining sectarian violence that 20,000, 30,000, 50,000, 100,000 Americans will not be able to stop.
I am not persuaded that 20,000 additional troops in Iraq is going to solve the sectarian violence there. In fact, I think it will do the reverse.
Look, I think that that we will long debate Iraq. We will long debate whether, at a very important moment in our efforts to root out terrorism, particularly in Afghanistan and on that border region with Pakistan, whether we took our eye off the ball. I think historians will debate that long after we're gone. I think they will come likely to the conclusion that no single event took our eye off of what needed to be done in order to occupy a country that until we got there didn't have a single member of Al-Qaeda.
invade Iraq?
Did we go through Congress to invade, to go to war? Don't we have to go through the act of Congress?
There was a vote in Congress.
It was a declaration of war?
It was a declaration of war. It was a declaration to enforce the first Gulf War Treaty.
Now in darkness, world stops turning. Ashes where the bodies beneath. No more war pigs have the power. Hand of God has struck the hour. Day of judgment, world is calling. On the knees the war pigs crawling. Begging mercy for their sins. Satan laughing spreads his wings.
The reality of the war's trillion-dollar cost, the thousands of casualties and millions of people displaced, aren't summed up in this line.
Progress,
making progress.
And as the story of this famous U.S. soldier,
Pat Tillman, who gave up a multi-million-dollar contract in professional football,
who was killed by friendly fire, illustrates, misinformation is provided too.
Tillman ordered his men up a hill to attack terrorists that had pinned down part of his platoon.
To create a heroic story, the details of Tillman's death were covered up.
They had told me, you need to keep your mouth shut about it.
All the generals were lying to find out that the military were the very people to lie to us. It's outrageous.
This was my first publication.
Veteran and Iraq war resistor Mathis Shiro, who wrote for military newspapers, some meant to influence U.S. lawmakers, says an agenda was always clear.
Always positive. You won't find a single thing critical of the military and anything really that I wrote.
With all this information being what's provided by the Pentagon, you have to wonder if Americans will ever understand the reality of the wars their country is fighting.
When you go to war, innocent people die, Americans die, insurgents die, there's a lot of death, and the bottom line is that we've got to start asking, is it making sense anymore?
Iran's emergency services attempt to help the wounded amidst panic on the streets of Chabahar. Two suicide bombers struck the port city during a Shiite mourning ceremony. They've claimed nearly 40 lives. The attack took place at the Imam Hussein Mosque as a ceremonial procession took place. One was detonated outside the holy building, the other within a crowd of worshippers. Security forces shot one of the bombers, but it was not enough to stop him unleashing the deadly force strapped to his body. The Sunni militants Jandala are reported to have claimed responsibility for the attack. The group has used simultaneous bombings against Shiites in the past, but the mourners are determined not to let the terrorists tear the nation apart.
Their goal is to divide the Shiites and the Sunnis and incite differences among them. In the view of all freedom seekers, it is not a good action and is condemned.
Iran's government has been quick to blame the attack on the West, saying the US funds Jandala, a charge that Washington has been quick to deny, adding the group to their list of terrorist organizations.
Everybody in this room, walks behind that counter, hit the road. You stay. Leave. You may leave.
Dean, he told you.
Women can leave. Six men stay. Everyone else leaves.
Talk. He's talking. John, go ahead.
Your wife.
I didn't have a scoop. No. No, Ginger.
Oh.
Ginger.
Please, just talk to us. If I can help you get your wife a job somewhere else, I'll be glad to do that. Yes, sir. No, you're not.
What did she do? I mean, because I really don't know who you're talking about, to be very honest with you. I have no idea who you're talking about.
She was fired.
I believe that you say that, but what did she do? If you're gonna kill yourself or kill us or whatever, at least let us know what's going on, because I'll be very honest with you. I swear, I don't know who your wife is or what she did. I don't. I don't want to die like anybody else doesn't.
Mr. Hussfeld signed the papers, I'm sure, but he doesn't know her. What's the situation?
I'm just asking you, what did she do? Was she a teacher? Was she a paraprofessional? Did she work in the classroom? Did she work in the cafeteria? Was she a bus driver? I don't know.
Hey, I will go with you. I will stand up with you to get your wife a job, whatever it takes. Hey,
listen. I'm the one that signed the paper, right? Okay. I don't remember, and I don't know who she is. But let them go. I'm the one that did it. I mean, they don't sign the papers. I'm the only one that signs them. Will you let them go? I don't want anybody to get hurt. And I've got a feeling that what you want is the cops come in and kill you because you're mad. Because you said you're going to die today. But why? This isn't worth it. This is a problem. Please don't. Please don't. Please.
Broken and furious, family members demanding answers after their relative is shot and killed by police. Long Beach police say they were forced to open fire on the man all because of what he was holding in his hands. Mary Beth McDade live now in Belmont Shore with the very latest. Mary Beth.
Well, Glenn, there has been a constant stream of people dropping by here where Doug Zerbe was shot and killed yesterday afternoon. They came here to pay their final respects, and as you can see, family and friends, they lit candles in his honor, and they also are demanding justice for him tonight.
My brother was a person. He was my parent's son. He was a father. He was our brother. You know, this is a real human being.
A sister is heartbroken tonight over the death of her brother, 35-year-old Doug Zerbe.
The thing that was always consistent with my brother was his proclamation for the amount of love that he had in his heart for his family, for his son, for the people that he loved.
Long Beach police shot and killed Zerbe Sunday evening. Authorities say they thought the water nozzle he was holding was a gun. And so when he pointed it in their direction, they unleashed a hail of bullets.
Police and thieves in the street. Oh yeah. Fight to the night.
to how many people have thought of bagging over a million at a casino. But this man used a gun to raise the stakes, and he's the odds. He took $1.5 million worth of casino chips at gunpoint. He then made off from the Bellagio Casino in Las Vegas on a motorbike. But how is he going to cash them? The chips are specific to the Bellagio, and police are on the lookout for any suspicious amounts being cashed. MGM Resorts, that own the casino, won't confirm the security, if any, the chips have. Some places use a radio frequency to identify chips. The man is suspected of another robbery in the Suncoast Hotel, again in Vegas.
All the crimes committed.
Put the knife down.
David 33, shots fired, morning, hello. Subject wouldn't drop the knife.
Shots fired, morning, hello. Units for David 33.
Oh, my God, hold on, hold on, in that way.
Get the laser monitoring.
Man, he had a knife and he wouldn't drop it.
A judge agreed to release that tape to the media, and that was done just a few hours ago.
An attorney for John T. Williams' family insists it shows an unprovoked attack on the woodcarver last August. Como 4's Michelle Esteban is live in our satellite center. Michelle?
Well, Eric and Dan, Williams' family's attorney called the tape significant to their case, yet Officer Ian Burke's attorney insists the video absolutely supports the officer's decision to open fire. From the moment Officer Ian Burke gives his first command, John T. Williams, seen here just moments prior to the shooting, has just 7 seconds to react until the first shot is fired.
Hey! Put the knife down! Put the knife down!
Police and thieves in the street. Oh, yeah! Fighting the nation.
Brass at Seattle Police want officers to watch their mouths. The department said several recent complaints about officers using profanity in their dealings with the public. Seattle Police officers recently received new training instructing them that profanity and other demeaning language will not be tolerated. Commanders say that if officers have to resort to swearing, they better be ready to justify it.
Badges. We ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
I believe the Bush administration's done a good job in protecting Americans after 9/11. I believe they've hurt Al-Qaeda, and I'm not saying this from any partisan point of view. I believe the Bush administration has damaged them, Al-Qaeda, hard. I believe we got them in a box, they got them on the run, and they protected us. And they've done so in a very aggressive manner. Guantanamo, waterboarding 3 times, and other things, okay? What I want is the President of the United States to have the ability to use waterboarding, just you, as an executive privilege when you feel American lives are in danger. All right? That's all I want. And I think most Americans agree with me. Let the commander-in-chief have the option so that we can get information that we've gotten 3 out of 3 times. I don't think that's unreasonable.
We've suspected it all along, but now proof. Consider our third story a public service announcement, as a new study shows that greater exposure to Fox News will leave you increasingly misinformed. A poll out of the University of Maryland finds that 90% of voters say they encountered information in the past election cycle that was misleading or false. 56% say that happened frequently. And those encountering the highest levels of spin just so happen to be frequent viewers of Fox News.
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for watching us tonight. Another outrage by Congress and what you can do about it. That is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. If the feds don't pass a new spending bill, the government might shut down in a few days. And I say, good. These pinheads need some time off. The Wall Street Journal says this is the worst Congress in modern history, and the folks seem to agree. New Gallup poll says 13% of Americans believe the current Congress is doing a good job. 13%. And now our pal Harry Reid, along with Appropriations Chairman Senator Daniel Inouye, have dumped a $1 trillion-plus spending bill on the Senate floor a few days before Christmas. Of course, the bill is loaded with pork. Apparently, the Democrats want us to fund a $10 million foundation for the late Congressman John Murtha. They also want $8 million for the Edward Kennedy Institute and $36 million more for public broadcasting so they can fire more people like Juan Williams. The list goes on and on. More than $8 billion in absolute waste. So this bill shouldn't pass. And you should call your congresspeople and senators and ask them to vote against it. The Wall Street Journal also opines that Congress has contempt for the taxpayers. And it's hard to argue with that. The voters last November sent a clear message. They want the wasteful spending to stop. But these people in Washington basically are saying, hey, blank you.
Society, don't we have the right to know what our government is up to? We've learned that Barack Obama cut ridiculous deals with other countries in order to get them to join the Copenhagen Climate Agreement. We learned that Hillary Clinton was embarrassed. We learned that some secrets that they make secret are really trivial. Don't we have the right to know this as mature adults? After all, you guys work for us.
No, we don't. No, we don't. No, we don't.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
A fight broke out earlier in the Ukrainian parliament. It started after a demonstration was held by supporters of the former prime minister and presidential candidate Yulia Tymoshenko. Accused of blocking proceedings, supporters of Tymoshenko's rival, President Viktor Yanukovych, tried to force the opposition deputies out of the hall. The fight ended up with several people injured and reportedly taken to hospital. Tymoshenko is being investigated over allegations of misuse of state funds, but she's dismissed these as an attempt to intimidate the opposition. The two rivals fought a close presidential election earlier this year, with Mr. Yanukovych winning and ordering his government to investigate his predecessor's affairs.
Is when it pays to be a good Samaritan. One gentlemanly act led to a $17 million jackpot in the Philippines. A 60-year-old man told the charity sweepstakes office that he was about to place a bet when a woman cut in front of him in the queue and placed her bet first.
And then he said that, you know, when I won, I thought of her and I thought that maybe if she had been patient enough to wait, then she could probably have won this prize instead of me.
Both used the lucky pick when choosing their six numbers, and the winning ticket was the biggest lottery cash prize in the country's history. The woman is probably wishing now that she had just been a little more patient.
Being fruitful and multiplying is about more than a woman's ability to obtain, hold down, and sustain life. This is about her generously planting seeds in minds, incubating them for 3 minutes of your time, and letting the mic go. Knowing God will help them grow, and every time you speak His truth, you will become fruitful. Multiplying His word, amplifying what's read, walking in what you heard, all the while planting seeds along the way. You see, anybody can make a baby these days, but can you evoke a thought in your listeners that will have them leaning sideways because they want to become your fertile ground? They want to catch your every verb and noun and use your flow to cause each seed to grow, making the manure that is pumped inside your mind by the media useful. Can you stand in front of children and speak in a level underneath speech because they respond to other stimuli, like if your words and your heart meet and reflect what the other has projected? We need to make sure the minds and hearts of our children are protected, nurturing more than just the wombs of newborns who are expected, making the spoken word tradition once again respected because God gave it to us, and its power He perfected. In Genesis 1:28, when He told Adam to be fruitful and multiply, His words weren't rejected. He spoke to nothing and the world was erected. If you speak of nothing, then the world is neglected, infected with brainwashed dummies, well-preserved mentally dead mummies who are so wrapped up in themselves, they're okay with never being able to speak words that produce life, who are all right with never having to think twice because once was hard enough. About our children who are growing up claiming to be tough, speaking violence into existence and having their own words called their bluff, not realizing they just committed verbal suicide. We need to be fruitful and multiply in Baltimore City because the powers that be are unleashing an educational genocide, causing our young people to become dead children walking. This is what we need to do. We need to stand up, actively listen, and be cognizant of how we are talking. Tread lightly when we are walking, because the fruits of a mother's labor are constantly watching and listening. You can see their eyes glistening. And if you look closely, you can see their minds processing every little thing you do, multiplying every action and becoming every negative epithet you spew. I wrote this for the youth so that they will know the truth. I wrote this for you to give of yourself, because this is an emergency. I wrote this with a sense of urgency, like I've only got 9.5 more years to write, because I was only given 33.5 years of life. So I'm preparing for my crucifixion right here tonight through self-sacrifice. And I'm engineering my resurrection from death's yoke with each pen stroke and every word I've spoke. I wrote this because when we are being fruitful and multiplying, speaking life to children dying, we're giving them a little bit of what they need most. And if you're wondering what that is, it's hope.
Well, I might be in detention a week, and the school might not be very happy, but we sure showed something much bigger last Wednesday. Okay, sorry. You know, this was meant to be the first post-ideological generation, right? This was meant to be the generation that never thought of anything bigger than our Facebook profiles and our TV screens. This was meant to be the generation where the only thing that Saturday night meant was X Factor. I think now that claim is quite ridiculous. I think now that claim is quite preposterous. I think now we've shown that we are as ideological as ever before. Now we've shown that solidarity and comradeship and all those things that used to be associated with students are as relevant now as they've ever been. You know, the most incredible thing that happened on Wednesday, I went down. I thought I was going to go down in lunch break and then get back in time for lessons. Perhaps I should have known they put the guy in charge of the G20 in charge. Perhaps I should have been more concerned for my life than for whether I was going to get down for lessons. But when I tried to get out and I was told it was a sterile area by police officers standing and not letting anyone out, I thought, well, that's why we need a university education. If we don't get one, we end up in police uniforms. You know, when I was kettled in there, I was with thousands and thousands of school students who'd come down with their ties around their heads in their school uniforms, and yeah, they were cold, who'd come down, who'd never been on a protest before, who'd never joined a political party or been involved in a political movement before, who didn't have any economic knowledge or political degrees, but they were there because they believed in something. They were there because they believed in something bigger, and they were there because they knew that either, you know, there weren't a million choices, there were two choices. Either they laid down and took whatever the government threw at them, or they stood up and fought back. And so those school students who'd never been involved in anything before stood up and they fought back. And when they were in that kettle, being kettled in by police, you know, the word went round as we were sitting, huddling around fires, sharing out what little food we had, and the word went round, people said, we know what they're up to. We know that they don't think we're a danger to the public. I'm 15 years old, people there were as young as 13. We know they don't think we're going to run riot through the streets of London. We know what they're up to. They think that if they kettle us now, we're not going to come on a demonstration ever again. Well, let the word go out from today, people said. Let the word go out about next Tuesday. Let the word go out about next week and next month and next year that they can't stop us demonstrating. They can't stop us fighting back. And however much they try to imprison us in the streets of London, those are our streets, and we will always be there to demonstrate. We will always be there to fight. People who had always thought that the police were just those people at the other end of the telephone line to help if there was a burglary. People who'd always thought that the media were just those friendly newspaper men who were there to give them that unbalanced picture of the facts. People learnt a lot last Wednesday. People learnt a lot as they huddled around fires and then emerged from that kettle to see headlines like vandals on the Evening Standard that afternoon. People learnt a lot when a police van was left in the middle of the road so that the police could tow it away and show the whole public, look what vandals these people are. People learnt a lot. So the message that goes out from last Wednesday is very clear. We are no longer that post-ideological generation. We are no longer that generation that doesn't care. We are no longer that generation that's prepared to sit back and take whatever they give us. We are now the generation at the heart of the fight back. We are now the generation that will stand with everyone who's fighting back. The most inspiring thing, I think, was that just after Wednesday, Hundreds of people joined a Facebook group, school students joined a Facebook group in solidarity with RMT members on strike. Those are people who previously thought tube strikes were something annoying because they stopped them getting into school. Now they think they've got to link arms and fight back with everyone. So we want to show solidarity with everyone who's fighting back. We hope you'll show solidarity with us and send a strong message to this government that they can't throw their cuts at us. We're going to stand up and we're going to fight back.
Sweet!
Donald Kehoe is the director of the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. As head of this private group interested in flying saucers, he has repeatedly attacked the United States Air Force and others for claiming that flying saucers are apparently flights of fancy and not flights by Martians or men from the moon. Independent surveys show that millions of Americans do share his belief in these celestial saucers. Major Kehoe, first of all, let me ask you this. Most people in the United States, in spite of the fact that I say that millions do believe, I think you will agree that most people in the United States don't believe in flying saucers from outer space. They probably hold the view of columnist Bob Considine, who wrote that flying saucers are products of, for the most part, quote, pranksters, halfwits, cranks, publicity hounds, fanatics in general, and screwballs, end quote. How do you feel about Mr. Considine's charge?
Well, I know where he got the story. He got it from Colonel Watson out at the Air Technical Intelligence Center in Dayton. In fact, the colonel went even a little farther, and he said behind every sighting was an idiot, a crackpot, a religious fanatic.
Well, now, you're not suggesting that Bob Considine is in the pay of the Air Force. He's an independent newsman with a considerable reputation.
I mean the colonel. No, I have every respect for Bob Considine.
In spite of the fact that he suggests that pranksters, half-wits, and screwballs are responsible for the stories about flying saucers.
Well, I wish I could show him any time a list of about 800 witnesses, some of the big names in aviation, including up to the rank of colonel in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. They're still flying, and they're still carrying passengers. They've never been grounded. They're still guiding airliners in, the radar men are, night after night in bad weather. If they're screwballs and incompetents, why are they still on the job?
Major Kehoe, where do you think flying saucers are coming from?
I don't know. There is an indication that they could be using Mars as a base. I don't mean they originate there, but every time Mars has approached us in the last 10 years, there's been a noticeable increase in saucer sightings.
Well, I saw the thing coming out of the sky. It had a one long horn and one big eye. I commenced a chicken and I said, ooh-wee. It looked like a purple people eater to me. It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. A one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. Sure looked strange to me. Well, then he came down to earth and he lit in a tree. I said, Mr. Purple People Eater, don't eat me. I heard him say in a voice so gruff,
I wouldn't speak a word so tough.
It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. Sure looked strange to me. I said, Mr. Purple People Eater, what's your line? He said, it's eating purple people, and that sure is fine. But that's not the reason that I came to land.
I wanted to get a job in a rock and roll band.
Yeah, that was old rock and roll, flying purple people eater, pigeon toed undergrow, flying purple people eater. Friendly little people eater, oh, what a sight to see. Well, then he swung from the tree and he lit on the ground. He started to rock, really rocking around. A crazy ditty with a swing, he tuned a singing.
Well,
the rock
people eater. What a sight to see. A dirty wind on his way, and in a what do you know? I saw him last night on the Star Out show. He was blowing it out, really knocking him dead. Playing rock and roll music through the horn in his head.
What is your theory as to the kind of people who fly these, or the kind of beings who fly these saucers?
Well, that's speculation. Willie Lay said recently they'd be just like the man next door, the invaders from space, and his reasons may be good. But most of the top scientists have said that the odds are that beings from other worlds would not be like us. Some of them would be. Dr. Harlow Shapley, for instance, said that there probably were at least 100 million inhabited planets in the universe. And Menzel, who doesn't believe in saucers at all, says that he goes that high or even higher. And among those, by the law of averages, a certain number of planets that would be like the Earth. Mm-hmm. And if evolution started at the same time, why, you might have the same type of being.
What do you think are the intentions of these people, for lack of a better name, of these people who are in these flying saucers?
Well, there's been no evidence of any hostility. During the last 10 years, what we call the modern phase, there have been sightings before then. There have been some accidents, Air Force pilots chasing these things. Captain Mantell was killed chasing one in 48, and two pilots disappeared chasing one in 53 over Lake Superior. But I think those were just accidents.
Just accidents.
Air Force shot down an unidentified flying object above a nuclear plant in the desert. The object appeared in a designated no-fly zone. The Israeli Defense Force says it has not found the debris yet to determine what it is, but the military says it followed procedure when the object was spotted. Honda is recalling 1.3 million cars. About 143,000 of them are in the United States.
History is not pushed by the casuistry of war, migration, imperial dynastic families and stuff like that. History is pulled toward an unimaginable something which is continuously trying to mirror itself in us. This is the same force that created the space shuttle. We are in a relationship to an unseen something which we keep trying to image with our mythologies, our religions, our technologies, our epiphanies. And I think that it's not so far away, that it isn't 10,000 years in the future. It is sometime in the next 50 years. And that this is what history was for. You see, history is an incredibly peculiar and brief phenomenon. I mean, viewed from the point of view of biology, it's less time than it takes for a new species to emerge. I mean, let's call history 25,000 years. You know, in frame one, you're chipping flint. In frame two, you're hurling an instrument toward Alpha Centauri. Like that, this happened. Well, what's happening? It's that mind itself is being pulled out of this creature, and it's being given hands and languages and symbolic systems in order to image the unspeakable. The unspeakable, I call it the transcendental object at the end of time. It casts, and it's in another dimension, it's in a kind of super space. And what it casts into history is the enormous shadow of its immanence. This is what straight people call God. This is what all these visionaries are raving about. It's that when you sink beneath the surface of ordinary causality and mundane ho-humism, what you discover is this enormous transcendental object, which you could call it, you know, the sacred heart of Jesus, or the flying saucer, or the philosopher's stone. It's all of those things, and much, much more. It's not only stranger than you suppose, it's stranger than you can suppose.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket, never let it fade away. Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket, save it for a rainy day. For love may come and tap you on the shoulder some starless night, just in case you feel you wanna hold her, you'll have a pocket full of starlight. Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket. Never let it fade away.
Never let it fade away.
Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket. Save it for a rainy day.
Save it for a rainy day.
For love may come and tap you on the shoulder some starless night, and just in case you feel you wanna hold her, you'll have a pocket full of starlight.
Pocket full of starlight.
Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket. Never let it fade away. Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket. Save it for a rainy day. For when your troubles start multiplying, and they just might, it's easy to forget them without trying, with just a pocket full of starlight. Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket, never let it fade away. Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket, save it for a rainy day.
Save it for a rainy day.
Save it for a rainy day.
Well, I guess I better get back to my show now. So long!